The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm feeling so much better now from that bit of flu that I had the last couple of weeks. I'm pretty much fully recovered. And I didn't use any antibiotics. My wife and I don't like antibiotics at all. We're trying to oppose that nonsense. Unless it's absolutely necessary, you know, this whole COVID story over the last few years has completely opened my eyes to the pharmaceutical nonsense, the absolute lies and fraud and corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and being dependent on a pill all the time for everything. You know, I like to find silver linings where possible. I'm very much a white pill person. I'm always trying to find something to do with that information. You know, I've got all this information that's going on. I know you got these globalists, these internationalists who are trying to make me sick, who are trying to keep me unhealthy and all this sort of thing. But the great thing about knowing that is that you're able to do something about it. It's one of the themes I'm constantly pushing on my show. Is don't always be a consumer of fear and pessimism. Do something about it. I try my best to walk the talk. I spend way more time outside than I think I ever did because I'm trying to get more sunlight on my skin, for example. I don't buy into the viral contagion theories anymore. So I don't fear people. It's the most liberating place to be when you can shed the layers of unnecessary fear that has been fed into you for years and years and years. I focus on diet. I'm very passionate about eating the most optimal diet combined with getting into the gym. I don't get fancy. I don't do all the things where you lie on your back and balance a ball and all this nonsense. I just do straightforward bench press and deadlifting, stuff that just makes my bones strong. It pushes my heart rate up a little bit. I feel great afterwards. And most importantly, I try my best to wake up with a smile every single day. I've always got something to be happy about or to be grateful for. And that is my modus operandi in a nutshell. I'm rambling now, but send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Jump into the live chat. It's on the website. It's open. I've got it in front of me. Going to be chatting to my friend Kevin Corbett in a moment. I think, Alex, that's all my housekeeping done. So let's go across to him. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Your trusted news source.
We stick to the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Kevin, it's nice to have you back in the trenches with me.
Thanks for inviting me back.
I was just opening my show with some positivity, but what you and I are about to talk about is not terribly positive, but I think we need to talk about it because it's actually very serious. And I think it needs to actually, be approached head on because it concerns me a lot. And I'm trying to think where to start. How do we even begin this conversation?
Well, it's a good point. And like you, I think it needs to be, it's not positive and it needs to be dealt with head on and then move forward over it or, you know, plow it into the ground and move forward. It's a difficult issue, isn't it? Because I've seen this in many respects over the last 30 odd years. And so I've got a historical approach to it. And maybe it's something that's quite widespread and that we're all part of to greater or lesser extent. I don't know. But certainly when you see it, you feel and you know that it's wrong. And it has a moral ring. It resonates badly. And it's about people on the right side attacking their own suppose.
Yes.
And why does that happen? For all sorts of reasons, I think. And I've described it as agents. And by that, I don't mean MI5 or CIA solely, although it could be, but it's more about people's agency and representing what they think is a set of ideas that need to be promulgated and pummeled into people in a fundamentalist way. Now, that sounds just like what we've lived through in the last 3 years with the totalitarian lockdowns and the totalitarian masking, injections, antivirals, and this mandatory enforcement of viral belief and impacting on human behavior. So people were coerced into being aligned with this. Their behavior was coerced into reflecting these fundamental beliefs, dogma, viral dogma, contagion theory dogma, basically. And so when I see that coming from the other side or the opposite direction, it resonates in the same way as something not positive. So that's what I think about it. And as regards where it comes from, I think it emanates from all sorts of different sort of areas in society. I mean, you go back to 1980s with AIDS and HIV, you had scientists who came out against not just the viral model, but the whole illness model of AIDS being viral. They were castigated. They were the epitome of venality. They lost funding. People like Peter Duesberg, I'm talking about, and investigative journalists like Celia Farber were targeted by agents of the United States government in many guises, not just agents employed and handled at distance, but functionaries within the agencies like ACT UP and the other pharma-funded and government-funded AIDS agencies to be attacked. And this happened to others like John Rockefeller as well, another investigative journalist of that era who's still around. Mm. Yeah, and this, when you look at the archaeology of that those attacks, they were multiple. Yes, they were state-funded, they were websites convened, there were scientists brought together to oppose what these people were saying. But there are also others within the AIDS dissident camp who were ostensibly on the same side, but their actions showed that they weren't, because the actions were divisive and were detrimental and split and fragmented the opposition. And I think this is what hasn't been learned in the last 3 years. People haven't learned from the history of AIDS and the AIDS activism enough. They haven't read enough. They haven't been around. Many of the people that have come to the fore in the last 3 years were nowhere in the 1980s, even if they're the same age as myself and Celia. They did nothing. They did nothing to help us, and they did nothing visibly. They're not in the literature, and they're not in the record. And yet those are some of the people that are now coming out saying that we're wrong, and we are not antiviral enough, or not this enough, and we're not that enough. Really, I question not just the provenance of these voices, but actually what their intentionality is. Because what I see is the fragmentation and the divisiveness.
Kevin, so something that really concerns me, and I know that it concerns you because we've been chatting via email, but let's use an actual example. Right, so the last few years, a lot of people's eyes have been opened to the propaganda and the fake pandemic and the virus narrative, which has taken thankfully, the opposing views have become a lot more popular now. And I think it's a good thing that people are questioning. David Raznik, who I think you know, biochemist of five decades or so, you know, he was onto the AIDS thing from already back in the 80s. And he wrote this wonderful piece called The Tyranny of Dogma, where he said that the people on our side who are looking for the truth are no longer looking for the truth because they've become dogmatic. They've become like a cult. And it's that militant style that is so off-putting that really just makes you wonder, are they really on our side?
Well, I think Dave is right. I haven't read that piece for quite a while, actually. And I should have mentioned David, because right at the beginning, he was there alongside Peter Duesberg and supported Peter Duesberg and worked with him. And they produce work ongoing through those attacks. You know, they produce papers, they did research, they did very good research in their own areas. But I think the dogma, where does this come from? And I think a quote that I'd like to just read is, you know, well, you can't cancel out everything that happened, even if the origin of it turns out to have been a lie. And if we just take that statement at face value, so because the origin of COVID or AIDS, the viral origin of it, is a lie, does that cancel out the harms that were done in the name of that lie? And, you know, does this mean that activism should focus on uncovering the lie over and above everything else? Is uncovering the lie the aim of the whole thing? So go to the basis of the last 3 years, virology, the lies of virology. Until everybody adheres to this truth, should we be saying that that's where all our push, all our focus should be, just on that particular lie and uncovering it? And I would say that that's unrealistic. It's unrealistic, and it's fundamentalist. And I would be certainly the first person to sign up to say that with every harm that's done in the name of COVID or AIDS or whatever, the so-called virology is uncovering that is part of the analysis, uncovering the virology. But does that mean that's where everything stops? So we all become virologists. We all become anti-virologists. We all become the antithesis of virology. And therefore, it's like, you know, it becomes like a creed. You know, I'm using a religious analogy here. So the creed starts, I believe in God the Father Almighty. I mean, I'm Roman Catholic, so I say the creed quite often. And so you say this like a mantra. And so I believe there's no viruses, viruses don't exist, et cetera, et cetera. And that becomes the axiom, the fundamental truth upon which all of my life is based. Yeah. To the extent that I don't mix with people who don't believe that, I don't.
No, but that's cult-like.
Well, it's cult-like, isn't it? It becomes a sort of bubble, a cult bubble. So you come on hard on everybody that skates over or avoids or doesn't believe in that axiom, that fundamental truth.
Yeah.
And irrespective of anything good they've done to push back on the harms of HIV AIDS or SARS-CoV-2 COVID, yeah, they push, you know, people are pushing back on the harms of these phenomena aren't necessarily antiviral. And therefore, do you just ignore what they're doing and say, it doesn't count, it's cancelled, because they haven't focused on this one lie, which we believe is the most important? And I think there's some argument for saying that that's an overarching truth that needs to be broadcast and put out there. And of course, in the last 3 years, we've had so much more of that than we had with HIV/AIDS. It was much more limited because of the lack of the internet initially, and because of publication censorship and all the other things we know very well. You know, we've known very well. So I would say, going back 30 years with this, what we can learn from what went wrong is the cleavage in the AIDS distant groups were around virus, no virus. This was a false binary that was created. It was a false binary. Yes, there were scientists that cleaved one way or another existentially in terms of viruses, but that didn't inform, that shouldn't have informed a fragmented position. And I think that's where these differences, with instead of the similarities between Duisberg's toxicological model of AIDS and the Perth Group's antiviral model, the similarities fitted together, but some elements of AIDS activism focused on the dissimilarities to create a binary, a false binary, and create division and fragmentation. And so to hit people like Faber, Duisberg, Rasnik, Rappaport, all these people stood out.
Bailey.
And also the Perth group to a lesser extent. Mm. But I would say that the scientists involved here and are also important in terms of their entourage, the people that follow. Mm. And I think that we have a responsibility, if I class myself as a health scientist here, we do have a responsibility to look at what's said in our name and what's done in our name. And if we don't agree with it, we should speak out about it, because I think that that's the social responsibility of science.
Mm.
Scientists.
I'm going to chat to you in a moment about a tweet from Denis Rancourt, which is directly related to this. But before I do that, I'm going to go to a break. I'll be back with you in a moment. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Charlie Robinson is talking about.
I was expressly told this last week from Joe Biden and Mayorkas that the number one threat inside the United States, I forget inflation or China or the, you know, 6 million people coming across the southern border, all that stuff is nonsense. But the biggest threat to democracy is white supremacy and domestic terrorism. Steve, did you get the memo on that?
I have been subjected to a barrage of this nonsense. I just found out that waking up early is white supremacy. I've learned
how
that going to the gym or exercising is white supremacy. I know. My show is by default white supremacy, and I'm not even sure who to apologize to. Look, there's a writer's strike right now in Hollywood, so what they do is they move over to DC and they just start cranking out the exact same nonsense that they would have been putting out through whatever woke idiotic TV show or idiotic woke film that they were going to be putting out, but instead they're striking. So now we've got all of the ridiculous nonsense going on out of DC that has accelerated a little bit since those guys went on strike.
Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Today, there is a war on for our children. They are under attack on every front: government, big tech, media, education, medical, Hollywood, and society. There is a complicit movement to normalize the sexualization of our children. It's hiding in plain sight. It's time for all of us to educate ourselves and our children about digital and real-time safety, because community creates change. We can no longer sit on the sidelines. There is more slavery today than any other time in history. It's called human trafficking. The safety of our children belongs to us. LINS Warriors are a nonprofit organization that works with and supports victims and survivors of human trafficking. We raise awareness and educate communities to provide intervention of human trafficking and the commercial sexual exploitation of children. Be a warrior. Take action today. Visit linswarriors.org to learn how you can get involved. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Kevin, so Denis Rancourt posted a tweet maybe week and a half ago, I don't know, in which he spoke about a podcast that he did with me. he was talking about vaccine deaths and how he uses all-cause mortality data. And I think he's got some incredible, incredible work behind him. All-cause mortality is so powerful. And there was a response to his tweet that said, I stopped watching after 10 minutes when you didn't deny the existence of the virus. And Denis then commented saying, this is bizarre. Why would you even say this or even think that? I then responded by saying, these people are becoming like a cult. They're militant and they're just shutting down otherwise healthy discourse. It doesn't matter what Denis' position on viruses is. We're talking about something else. And then a bunch of these militant types screenshotted that and started sending it all over the place to my own guests and saying, Germ is calling you cult leaders or cult followers or whatever. And that there, right there, is what you're talking about. It's this weird dogmatic approach that is completely and utterly what's the word? It's not tangible. There's nothing you can do with that. It's harmful.
Well, and if you try and go after it rationally, it's like an ocean shelf that just gets deeper and deeper. And it's not an argument for ignoring it, but it's not a rational approach. And I mean, I think you could say to various commentators, you know, rationally, look, you know, there's elements of your argument that are premised on, you know, belief in the virology or whatever. I think that's a rational argument. But when it's sort of done like in the way you just described, as a form of vilification or going around to people that in your network, it becomes almost like an ad hominem. It becomes something personal. And it's
destructive.
It's become something about fundamental. It's like a fundamentalism. And it has a righteous quality to it as well. A righteous quality. So it's taking some sort of moral stand on this rather than something else. And it becomes something other than activism. And also the time spent doing that. Yeah. How long does it take? And the people doing it, what do they do? I mean, what is their life? What is their job? What is their job? Is that their job? How do they, what's their provenance? I think these are good questions to ask when people are attacking you from a position of, they're holding you up to some sort of standard their interpretation of what scientists are saying, what health.
But it's not scientific. It's not scientific. It's something else. Because this is the shutting down of critical thinking.
Well, I think it is a form of McCarthyism, in the sense of holding you to some sort of standard that they interpret. They are the interpreters of the standard. Only they can say what's right or wrong. And who are they? Who are these people to do that? And of course, Twitter works like this as well, remember? Twitter is, this is why really I've sort of almost come off it, because it's a toxic environment of claim and counterclaim and attacking and counterattacking. And I really don't know anymore what it's about, except those sorts of behaviors. And it's certainly not a rational environment, I don't think. And many things aren't, I know. But so I think going back to this example that you've given, I didn't see this, but I can understand where it comes from. And I can understand that it's some sort of dogma. But I question the intentionality of doing that. If the intention is just to get out there and say, well, your arguments are this, that, and the other about all-cause mortality, and underneath it is this acceptance of these axioms, you know, then you've put the idea out there. But when it's attacking people, trying to shut down the or make people frightened of, or threatening. I mean, I've had people coming on my Substack saying, if you don't do this, I'm going to do that. Mm. You know, so it's like they're coming into your space and threatening you with a sort of being beaten up, metaphorically speaking.
And then the best part is the labeling, grifter, controlled opposition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've used the word grifter, but controlled opposition. Well, what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? It's like saying you're racist or you're homophobic. Mm. Or these are all very slanderous terms today that don't necessarily mean what they did 20, even 10 years, 5 years ago. They've been used and abused, these terminologies. So they're ways of besmirching your reputation, or trying to, I think. And this is what really bothered me, because I was sort of getting this sense that it won't be long before I'll be attacked if I don't keep in line or say this or that. Or, you know, I won't be antivirus enough. I won't be fundamentalist enough in what I'm saying. And or I'm just dismissed as some British intellectual, I think was the terminology, who was supporting the gay community. That was one comment that came to me, which is interesting because I have never subscribed to such a concept as the gay community, and I can see all sorts of problems with identity politics. But coming back to this, I think it's a question of just batting it back and actually limiting engagement with it.
Yes.
Because the more back and forth, the worse it gets. It gets deeper.
I was just going to ask you, sorry for interrupting, but perhaps a way to deal with this. And I think there might be a few prongs to this approach. One of them is what you just said now, limiting one's interaction, because honestly, it's the same as dealing with wokeness. There is no win for you. It's about their own sort of God complex, their own narcissism. And they generally are people who have very few followers, are not probably not successful in life. Maybe they just spend all day long, you know, on their phone or something.
Yeah.
But I think limiting engagement is one. Something that I personally do now is I just block, because I'm not interested in giving them the time. And I know that blocking them annoys them, but there's no value in having them, you know, coming into my space and then throwing insults.
And also, you have a responsibility. If you've got if you're publishing you're putting things out in Twitter, it's your own little sphere, really, isn't it? Your own domain. Mm. And people engage with you, with your ideas positively, or criticize you in a way that's fine.
Constructive.
And then they're getting exposed, they're getting attacked as a result of engaging with you. So this is not right to allow that to happen. This is what I think. And this is what will happen. This is what happens to other Substacks, where people come on and they start criticizing the people that are engaging with the writer and destroying destroying other people. It's like a scattergun approach. And it's just not productive. And why have this? You know, where is this going on the greater scheme of things, you know? And for goodness sake, you know, I think there's a very clear delineation over the last 3 years of what's right and wrong in what's happened. We know what's wrong and we know what's right. And I mean that morally, spiritually and scientifically, and therefore you can tell the intentionality from people's background and what they've done in the last 3 years. And to slag off, to decry everything that people have done against the harms of COVID just because they don't accept the critique of the virus is very wrong, because you're destroying good work, you're destroying people's work, you know. This, you know, You can't cancel out everything that happened, even if the origin of it turns out to have been a lie. And you can't cancel out the good things that people have done pushing back on COVID and the totalitarianism just because they don't subscribe to a critique of virology. You know, it's not right. It's not like a stick of rock. You know, people can fight against the totalitarian biosecurity state, totalitarianism, without subscribing to belief or non-belief in viruses. I'd hope that they could look at those arguments and take them on board. Because they don't, doesn't devalue, in my view, the work that they're doing.
That's exactly what I was going to say now. So I don't know if you're aware, but Sukrit Bhakti right now is in court as we speak, in fact. And they're trying to take him down. And I've been tweeting about it throughout the course of the day. And I got a reply from somebody saying, yes, but has he come out and said that viruses don't exist? Now, I mean, Kevin.
That's a very good example of what we were talking about, isn't it? I mean, so let's just let him hang, shall we? Let's just let him hang, and because, you know, he's not antiviral enough. Let's just, you know, this is exactly the same thing that happened with Duisberg in the 1980s and 90s. You know, the pushback against the mainstream scientists that come out against a paradigm is always worse. It's always worse. It was the same with Duisberg. He lost his grants. He lost his status at University of California. He became an undergraduate tutor, kept his professorial title. But, you know, this is always what happens. And then the vilification again within the activist sphere mirrors and resonates the mainstream attack on people. And that tweet you just read out is a good example. That whoever issued that tweet is just as bad those that are trying to prosecute Bhakti in the courts and anybody else that's come out against what's happened. And I can't really say any more than that because it's just so wrong. It's just so where's that it's coming stupid. From? It's stupid. It's ignorant. It's ignorant of the history of activism against the virus as much as against anything else, and it's just an ignorant statement, but it's a malevolent statement as well. Not just ignorant, it's malevolent, I'd say, in its intent, because here is a scientist who right from the beginning of 2020 knew it was wrong, spoke out against it, wrote one of the first books on it, you know, and okay, so his critique of microbiology is not going to be the same as, you know, the Perth groups or the Baileys or the Kaufmans or the Cowans, because he's come from within the paradigm. His whole career has been based within the paradigm. But the fact that he's turned against it at this stage and the harms of it is that to be ignored just because of this one aspect of some critical activist somewhere has said that, oh, they're not antiviral, they're not an anti-virology. I think this is just crazy, really.
Yeah.
I would say, where are these arguments coming from? Where are these people? Where's their intentionality? And who's actually behind this? Because is this just the Twitter sphere gone mad or gone bad? Or is there more intentionality behind this that we don't know? And we do know from the Kuritsky affidavit that Celia Farber has released. It's on my Telegram channel. It's out there in the public, that the authorities were behind a lot of these critiques of the scientists in the 80s and 90s and behind the activists that looked as though they're on our side. Yeah. So I would question where this is coming from. I'd question the provenance, like we question the provenance of the RNA, whether it's viral or not. I question the provenance of this so-called activism. Where is it coming from? What's its intention? And really quarantine it. Quarantine it. Put it away. Kill it dead. Kill it right at the beginning. Don't give it any quarter. And like the virus, don't give it any quarter. But this is fundamentalism, I think, on one level. But I think it's also, it shows bad intent, in my view. And but then I'm just, what am I? I'm just some British intellectual who doesn't know anything, you know? That's what one of them said about me recently, you know?
Is that really what was said about you?
Well, it was, but I mean,
I think it's great.
Well, I think there's maybe, you know, I can't help the way I speak, you know, I don't have
to. I would love to be a British intellectual.
I don't think I'm an intellectual at all. But if you saw me on a day-to-day level, it'd be less than anything intellectual. But the reality is we can all get these labels and we all have to deal with, look, I welcome questions like this and criticism because it means people are trying to engage with you. And I don't mind being labeled whatever, and I could defend myself. But the reality is we all get categorized, we all get labeled, and we put things out in the public sphere and we have to accept critique of them, being challenged. That's not a problem. But this is more than being challenged. This
no, it's
is
malicious.
Actually being It's malicious, and it's about a campaign of vilification and besmirching people. And when I saw that happening on an email thread that I blind copied into, and it concerns Celia Farber's work, I said to people, I don't agree with this. If she knew what you were saying, you've copied me into this, knowing that I've worked with her, I know her very well, and I would have some concern about watching this on an email screen. So why copy me into it? And when there was no cessation of it, I said, I'm going to give this to the person concerned. And because they've been vilified in the past, and it was growing, trying to amass, you know, trying to develop some sort of critical mass against this journalist. And I've seen that a lot in the last year. And I think that you have to say something about it, Jeremy. You can't say, you know, I'm not going to engage in it, take me off this thread. You have to say it's wrong, you know. I mean, you have to speak out about it. Yeah, there's no, it's the same as the COVID or the HIV. You know, you've got to apply the same principles to all of these things. You can't have different strokes for different folks. You can't apply a lesser degree of moral judgment over this compared to something else. And I think, you know, it's fine about being challenged in public. And it's fine about, you know, being called to account for something you've said or not said, but I think where it goes further is it's more insidious, and I think this is what you've picked up and you've experienced on Twitter. But of course Twitter's all about that, isn't it? It's about when that happened to me in the past, Twitter's never responded positively. They've always ignored my complaints. So there we go.
Let's just let's quickly pick up on this after the break. My name is Jerm. This is TNT Radio.
The World Health Organization is on record as praising China's tyrannical lockdowns. You won't believe this clip from a high official at the World Health Organization.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The World Health Organization's Bruce Auward, head of the WHO China Joint Mission, urged the world to follow China's lockdowns back in February of 2020. The WHO even set a sham investigative committee to China to tell the world we have to copy their tyrannical COVID response. Here is what Mr. Auward of the WHO said.
What China has demonstrated is you have to do this. And if you do it, you can save lives and prevent thousands of cases of what is a very difficult disease.
So now you know the rest of the story. The World Health Organization duped the rest of the world into thinking communist China had the answers to a viral outbreak. We must never again allow COVID lockdowns, COVID mandates, public health authoritarianism. Reject the Great Reset. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So the great comment here in the live chat, Kevin. I don't at this stage care whether Sukhrit Bhakti believes in the virus or not. His arguments and warnings were always about the harm of the mRNA on the body. Yeah. And he has been absolutely correct. And that is what critical thinking is about. It should be multifaceted. It's not only this sort of monolithic approach that you've been outlining.
Yeah, I mean, I think that his work, you know, stands on its own reputation, its own credibility and its authenticity. And of course you can take issues with the basic science of any scientist that's spoken out in the last 3 years. You know, over here in the UK, we have the World Council for Health led by Tess Laurie. It's not antiviral at all. You know, and I criticized it in the past and I supported it as well. But I would say if the British government took advice from Tess Laurie, well, wouldn't we be in a better state? You know,
yeah.
Let's face it, if the British government took any advice from any of these agencies that have been formed to fight the whole thing, even if they're not antiviral, we'd be in a better position. Let's look at it on the surface, what people are saying, and otherwise, where are we going to go? Where is the fight? Where is the momentum going to come from? If any activism per se has got to start with the big lie, the key lie of there being no virus, then there could be nothing done. There would be nothing much done, because very few in the truth and freedom movement aspire or espouse or understand the critique of virology that many people, including myself, have been proposing over the last 3 years, and me before the last 3 years. And therefore, it would nullify any activism if we had to say any activism's got to proceed with those axioms. Of course, I prefer that it did, and that's what I've tried to work for, to try and get the arguments out there, try to be a voice, you know, basing what they're saying on the critique of virology. But you've got to be pragmatic. You've got to realize that not everybody's going to engage with that. And therefore, that's going to be an issue. If that particular critique has got to inform every bit of activist work, then there'll be no activism. And I think that's the worry that I have, Jeremy, is if that's what's being said and being put out there, then it's an argument for division and fragmentation. It's an argument for destroying the critique of what's happened in the last 3 years, the totalitarian. You know, it's a way of destroying the pushback. And I would say there's got to be some commonality here between different camps, different factions, really.
But it's so obvious to me what the best way to deal with this really is. It's so simple. You just accept that everybody is at a different place in their journey of knowledge discovery. And what you are wanting is to look for the wins. You know, if I always use the story of Lord of the Rings. Here you have Frodo. Mm-hmm. is this little guy who cannot ever get to Mount Doom unless he has those allies along the way. They're all different. They all have different strengths and weaknesses. But they,
I would say that that's a very strong, robust argument for going forward. But some people don't believe that, and therefore, that's why you're getting this these voices that are, you know, provenance unknown very often, and it's quite interesting. It's an interesting phenomenon, this, because it's like your own side, you know, it's like a fundamentalism from within your own side that's coming to the fore and saying it's got to be this, it's got to be that, otherwise it's nothing. And what about all the good that's been done in the activist sphere in the last 3 years by people and scientists that don't have a critique of virology? They accept the axioms and the so-called science of the pseudoscience, as we say, of virology. Are we saying that everything they've done to push back on the COVID injections, the totalitarian masking, social distancing, is all wrong and doesn't have any value just because of their scientific understanding? And I would say, no, that's absolutely wrong, totally wrong way of looking at it. And I can understand where that's coming from on one level, because it's a very beguiling argument to say, if we all accept the critique of virology, that there is no science of virology, it's all projection of ideas and theories into data since the late 19th century, which I would agree is correct, then it sort of changes and reframes everything. But it doesn't get rid of the harms that are done. You've got people that have had these injections that have suffered and died and are suffering still. You've got people who've been locked up and had their freedoms removed for no reason at all. You've had all sorts of other morbidity across the populations and mortality. Those are just not wiped out because there's no virus. In fact, they're even worse. The harms are even more requiring more pushback because of the lie, rather than, you know, reframed and evaporated because there's no virus, or ignored, you see. And I think that's the other issue I'd take with it. There's no good ignoring the harms from the lie, you know, as a result of the lie. The harms are there.
Sorry for bulldozing you there, but he has a great comment in the live chat. Both sides are not engaging in good faith arguments. Each want to win and are getting bogged down in the dogma.
I think it can become dogma. I think there does need to be a focus on putting the science right. But you see, this is where I'd be criticized as being mainstream, you see, because and not coming away from the mainstream enough to say that it's all wrong. And I think it is all wrong. I think science is totally corrupt and corruptible. The peer review process, the publication process. I've said that for a long time. I've been a product of it. I've not had things published because of that. But I have had things published in other areas. So I've been seen as mainstream or non-mainstream, depending on how you look at the work overall. What I'm saying is we do need a new mainstream, one that takes these critiques of virology as the axioms of a new mainstream, and that virology will be pushed to a fringe. It'll be pushed out. But that will only happen when hearts and minds are one, when people see the sense of what's been argued on their own. It won't happen through legislating for it, or forcing people, or coercing them, or slagging them off on Twitter, or sending emails around, mobbing people. It just doesn't work like that. That creates the opposite, really. And I think that sort of behavior isn't particularly productive. It's a cul-de-sac. And its provenance, as I said earlier and repeatedly, I'd question where that's coming from and whether that isn't orchestrated behavior that's serving the it's serving the purposes of the authorities on one level, because it's creating fragmentation and atomization amongst people that should be more united. We don't have to be united on everything. But, you know, as I said, you know, if the British government took the lead from these agencies that have been fighting things in the last 3 years, like Together or World Council Health or whatever, would it be better than the, you know, Imperial College or the Gates Foundation or whatever they've been using? And maybe that's a very naive attitude. That's what I'd be criticized for, being naive and not more granular. I would say there's a lot of truth in what I'm saying, personally. I think
there's huge amounts of truth in what you're saying, Kevin. That's why I invited you on, because I'm in agreement with you, and I think what you're saying is brutally honest. What I'm struggling with, though, is where this ends up, because on something that you haven't mentioned, maybe you implied it, though, is that if this continues and it grows, it makes our arguments look completely Pythonesque, ridiculous and absurd, and therefore they just get rejected all over again.
Well, that's what I was going towards earlier, was where does this come from? Is it an orchestration, you know, and the people proposing it, do they realize that in a bigger picture this could be handled in all sorts of ways by the authorities to create the notion that these ideas are totally ludicrous and should be dismissed? And people judge you by your behavior. And do you role model good ethics? You know, and I think this is one thing about the demeanor of a scientist. The ethical demeanor is important. And that you say, if things are being done in your name, and I saw this, my work was being used. People were saying, haven't they seen the videos and the papers from Kevin Corbett? Do they not know that they're stupid? And my name and work was being used to hit people. And so that's why I've spoken out about it on my Substack.
Not in my name.
Not in my name. And this is important, I think. We cannot just stand by and say, we're just doing critiques of virology here and, you know, what people make of it and what they do with it and who they hit with it is another matter. It's not the case at all. I think that scientists have a social responsibility that go beyond just the printed word. Yeah, I think.
Okay, we are running out of time, Kevin. I'm sure you can see. So let's just quickly promo your work. How can I follow you?
I'm the Telegram channel, and I have now a Substack, which I've opened, which I hope to be writing more, publishing more on, not every week, but maybe every couple of weeks, depends on where the interest takes me. I'm not a brand, so you know, I'm not a brand, but that's what I've done anyway. And of course, talking to you and other journalists as well, I think it's quite important. And that's where I can be found.
Kevin Corbett, I really appreciate this very important conversation with you. I think we're going to be coming back to this in the future. So, but for now, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Bye-bye.
Listen, for those listening, I strongly recommend going to Kevin's Substack. He's a good writer. Kevin, you really are. You're a great writer. I love the way you think. You articulate your thoughts so beautifully. That's the one thing I will say about the British. You have really fantastic ways of articulating your thought. I, as a South African, I'm just I'm here because of the British Empire, but listen to my accent. My English is completely broken now. It's a mixture of all sorts of languages. So I don't speak the Queen's English, but I really would love to, or actually I must say the King's English now. Hey, I can't say the Queen's English anymore. But yes, I, I love the fact that you are a British intellect, or if you're labeled that, and I'm very jealous.
I better live up to that label then.
Well, Alex, I think, would be an Australian intellect. But is there such a thing as an Australian intellect? They're also a result of the British Empire. but they've also got a funny accent like me. Hey, Alex. in any event, thanks, Alex, also for keeping the show going. Again, it's been pretty smooth. No gremlins today. I'm telling you, this is a good thing. This is a good omen we've got going here, Alex. Who's up next, Alex? What's his name? Steve Hook. There we go. He's up next. Send me an email, jimwarfare@tntradio.live. Anything you want, I don't really mind. Any feedback is great. I love knowing that I'm not speaking into the void. I'll catch you tomorrow. My name is Jim. This is Jim Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.